The following podcast is a W2M Network original production. Visit W2Mnet.com for all of our other great podcasts, plus news, reviews, articles, and opinions from the worlds of wrestling, video games, football, and entertainment.
For close to a century, women have more than held their own in the male-dominated industry of sports entertainment.
There's your winner, Mae Young.
Matt Mavens, like Mae Young, helped shatter the proverbial glass ceiling, inspiring generations who would blaze a path.
It's a blaze for sure!
Taking their preternatural skills to unprecedented heights.
All or nothing of the boots hole!
Leading to a revolution in the women's division.
What a sight! A groundbreaking moment! The celebration of a new era in WWE.
The greatest era of women's wrestling of all time.
Now, for the first time in history, 32 women from all over the globe take their rightful place in the spotlight, celebrating the legacies of those who have paved the way while showcasing their modern-day virtuosity. Tonight, these 32 competitors vie for all the glory, the honor, and the prestige of winning the inaugural Mae Young Classic.
WU2M proudly presents to you the Mae Young Classic. And here's your host, Paul Leeser, Harry Broadhurst, and Patrick Ketza.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Wrestling Unwrapped to the Max. We are talking the Mae Young Classic here. This is our second episode of coverage, where we will be covering the third and fourth episodes of the tournament that just came out on Monday. I am your host, Paul Leeser, joined by Mr. Harry Broadhurst.
Good evening, everyone, once again.
And Mr. Patrick Ketza.
Why did I get so many wrong?
Why did you get so many wrong?
Because he didn't look at spoilers, Paul.
This is true. He did not look at spoilers. I did.
Terrible person. Joke continued. We carry on.
So first things first, thank you to 401mania.com and Last Word on Sports for hosting us, helping us out, getting our word out there. We appreciate them. You can find all three of us on W2Mnet.com as well. That's where you can find this episode. All of our shows, such as Wrestling Unwrapped and Wrestling to the Max, and all of our other fine programs on there related to football, entertainment, video games, wrestling, all sorts of great stuff, MMA. It's all there. It's waiting for you to dive into, so just go there and check it out. So we're going to go ahead and dive right on into episode 3 here, which opens with Aisha Raymond from England taking on Toni Storm. And I thought this was fine overall. Aisha is using her power game. Toni Storm is basically Toni Storm, and the crowd just eats it up because she's just wonderfully talented all the way around. In-ring, character-wise, all that great stuff. I think she's basically the entire package. And Toni ends up getting the win here after Aisha misses a big splash, and she rolls her up for the victory.
Why? This is among the first times that I've ever seen Toni Storm. Very, very good. No doubt about that. And, you know, I will gladly be on of anyone that uses the Mad Hatter hats. I did love commentary, especially Lita mentioning, you know, how would JR look in that hat instead of his traditional hat?
Yes.
You know, Raymond, I didn't think was bad, but the problem is, you run into an issue of having two powerhouse wrestlers in the same tournament. You know, so she kind of had a precedent that she had to follow. I don't think she's followed that precedent, you know, the other one being obviously Jazzy Gabbert. But I thought, you know, she held her own in the match. I thought it was, you know, a pretty good opener. And quite frankly, anyone that uses the flying asshole, you know what? Perfectly okay by me. Thank you, Toni.
So, Not super familiar with, well, frankly, with either of these women, because, as mentioned before, I'm not super caught up on modern Shimmer. But to kind of put this into perspective,
which neither have been to, so don't worry about that.
Oh, well, yeah. Okay then.
Tony's stardom in progress for the most part.
I could have sworn Tony had been in Shimmer before.
Anyways. No, she was supposed to be in Orlando, but things happened. But no.
All right. Well, as far as Toni Storm goes, you know who I thought of when I saw Toni Storm here, Paul?
Who's that?
Rhea Ripley.
Mm.
Same vibe. Same superstar attitude, same superstar vibe, down from the entrance all the way to the way she handles herself between the ropes as well. Toni Storm is going to be a women's wrestling superstar should she decide to be so. It's going to be all about her dedication to the sport. Aisha was, well, there, to be honest. I wasn't terribly impressed. But it's not like this was a bad match or anything. It's not like this was, you know, Marty Bell versus Rachel Evers bad or anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think this is just, it is what it is. This is basically here to, I think, mostly introduce you to Toni Storm and show her what she's really all about. And she has this whole rock star gimmick, and the vibe absolutely fits her even. I think there's a lot to love about Toni. I've been a big fan of hers since I got into stardom back in 2015. Her runs in progress recently have been phenomenal as well. So anytime I've seen her, she's been nothing but wonderful, and this was no different. Moving on from there, you have Dakota Kai debuting to take on Kavita Devi from India. Go ahead, Patrick.
So, remember how I said I didn't think Rachel Evers versus Marty Bell was the worst match of the first round? That's because of this. I have said for a long time that Dakota Kai, I thought, had the total package to be a star in the WWE. This match almost makes me look like an idiot. Almost.
No,
Harry.
This match.
Almost,
this,
Harry. Shut up.
No, just. I'm saying what I'm thinking here. No, this just proves that Dakota's not a miracle worker.
I can't believe I'm about to say this. I'm pretty sure Dakota Kai actually, not only was she trained by the Great Khali, but I'm pretty sure Devi is a female Great Khali.
Well, with the exception of a Lucha arm drag, I would agree with that. JR's line about wanting to see Great Khali try that, though, did have me laughing pretty hysterically.
Yes.
That one got me too. But this match was just bad. This match, to me, was the worst match of the first round. And, you know, I love the big dog. I love Evie. I love Dakota Kai. God, I hope her next round match is better. And quite frankly, it'd be almost impossible to not be better, considering that she will be facing Rhea Ripley, and hopefully Kai can get more offense in than literally the finisher, you know, being the Yakuza kick and the double foot stomp, because I'm pretty sure that was almost all of her offense in this match, because quite frankly, I'm not sure that Devi actually knows how to take offense.
Go ahead,
I'm here. Done.
This match was a hot mess, but I disagree with Patrick. I think Bell and Evers was worse, because we kind of knew going in that Kavita Devi. I mentioned it when we talked about this match in the prediction special. Four words you never want to use in regards to professional wrestling. Trained by Great Khali. Case in point. She has a long way to go if she's ever going to be anything for the WWE. And I can understand them wanting to capitalize on their newfound popularity over in India. I mean, you know, 1.3 billion reasons, insert Jinder Mahal joke here. But there's nothing marketable about Kavita Devi right now. And I say that as somebody that always tries to find the positive in these kind of things, and there's just no positive to work with there. She's got a long way to go.
I do agree she has a long way to go. I'm going to play a little bit of devil's advocate here. I did not think Devi was as terrible as you guys are making her out to be. Her moveset is definitely limited, for sure. She ends up repeating moves in this match, which is a big no-no if you ask me. But I think the little bits that she did show were fine. And this was a match built around showing off her power, while Dakota Kai does, I think, one of the things that she is fantastic at, and that is playing babyface in peril. And I think that, for what it's worth, the live crowd totally bought into that. And I think that helped make this a little bit better than what you guys are making it out to be. I'm not saying this is the world's greatest match, but to say that Devi was complete garbage, I think is maybe going a little too far. Just my two cents. So moving on from there, I guess, since nobody else is going to say anything. Sage Beckett takes on Bianca Belair, and I thought this was fine for the most part. I think that what really worked here is they really, I don't think these two held anything back from each other. And clearly I think the WWE has a lot of high expectations for Belair, and I think she met them in this. She's one of those total package people in this as well. Maybe not the same sort of vibe that I think you get from Toni Storm or Rhea Ripley, but Bianca Belair brings her own set of stardom, I think, to the table. She's got the attitude. She seems to be great, really, at everything they've had her do, and is one of those well-built WWE stars.
Why was she not disqualified?
For the hair?
Yes, because to me that, granted, yeah, you know, it's part of her body and, you know, technically legal, but to me, that's using your hair, which, you know, the way that it's tied up, it's using it as a weapon. And for some reason, despite the fact that, you know, it'd be a, you know, a crappy thing to do, but to me, I thought Belair actually should have been disqualified for it. Also, why are power big, you know, kind of, I don't want to call Sage Beckett a brute, but, you know, kind of the bigger, more powerhouses are now 0-3 in the tournament, which I found really weird. You know, I thought Belair definitely delivered. I am surprised that Beckett's out in the first round. I won't deny that. I thought, you know, the match was pretty good. It was, you know, better than, in my opinion, the previous match. You know, but you had to have some upsets. I'm surprised it came here, but I'll be interested to see what Belair can do in the future against her upcoming opponent.
I need to preface this by saying that I don't actually dislike Bianca Belair. I just don't get it. Like, I had this same problem connecting with the Usos as well once they came back with a more urbanized gimmick. I don't connect to it. Frankly, I felt there was a much better story to be told throughout the course of this tournament with Sage Beckett. The kind of Sage's redemption story, coming back to the world of professional wrestling after having to leave it due to weight issues and injury problems before. Looking for redemption after becoming arguably the scourge of a locker room after what happened with her and Daphne in TNA. So, I mean, I'm not against Bianca Belair advancing here, but I picked Sage Beckett in my preview, and while I agree that Belair is showing signs of brilliance, I still think there's a way to go there as well.
Well, I mean, breaking news here, Harry, you sound like the whitest guy ever. No offense.
Oh, you know what? I wanted to make that comment.
you know what, Paul? I'm perfectly okay with that.
I don't really feel like Bianca's in that same vein as the Usos, but I mean, she's just a very sassy character.
She's definitely, but that's my point, though. She definitely has an urban sass about her that I don't think necessarily translates to to somebody like me, I guess.
Okay, white bread.
Yeah, that's...
cornbread, first of all, get it right. Second of all, I wasn't unimpressed by her. I thought that what she did in the ring looked crisp, and I thought that the qualifying match that she had on NXT television was actually pretty decent as well. Mm-hmm. But like I said, though, I still felt that there was a much bigger story to be told with Sage Beckett here than having Bianca Belair advance.
I think that's a fair point. Both of these women are signed. We know that. So they could be waiting to just tell Sage's story at a later date. Because obviously I don't think they want to get, you don't want to give everything away in one go, no matter where you're at. So I think, and it's kind of nice. A lot of the NXT built people so far have just been getting the brunt end of the stick essentially. And Bianca, I think, is really the first one to get the win here. And that's, I think that's something to take away from this too. And I don't know. I think Belair is going to be pretty big for WWE. Honestly, at least NXT so far has seemed to gravitate to her pretty quickly. I know that's not a great measuring stick, but for sure, she feels like she has everything that they're looking for and will definitely get behind and try to turn into a star. And I feel like she can knock it out of the ballpark. And then that leads us to our main event here. Piper Niven taking on Santana Garrett. And I loved this match as well. Santana Garrett, I'm a huge fan of. And somebody who I am just consistently shocked by that hasn't gotten a WWE contract again, just because she's got everything that they're looking for. She's great in the ring. She's got a great look. I think she's great at promo. She's almost a modern day Hulk Hogan in a sense to me for women, in that she's this larger than life character who is trying to constantly do the right thing and be the good guy. And paired against that, and Piper Niven here, who is basically working the big powerhouse angle that she does in Stardom, which is great. And these two just have a phenomenal match that Piper Niven ends up coming out on top with after the big splash. Sit out power slam.
Michinoku driver, technically.
So, correct me if I'm wrong. A Michinoku driver is a sit out body slam, right?
Yes. The
this
Michinoku
was clearly a sit-out power slam. She went from the shoulder to the mat.
Yeah, no, it's from the shoulder. The second variation of it is from the inverted face lock.
Okay. I'm used to seeing it as the sit-out body slam. That's all I'm saying.
I'll put it this way. This match was Piper Niven taking pretty much everyone who's tried to shame her about her weight, mm-hmm. and telling all of them where to stick it. And quite frankly, I could not be happier for Piper, considering the fact that once again, all three main events, you know, deliver. I thought they had one hell of a match.
Yeah.
And you're 100% right, Paul. Santana absolutely has the look WWE and has the skill and has the promo skill, and she's one of those, and I've always wondered, why is she not there?
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, Niven, while playing a powerhouse, I thought had an incredible match. She is kind of going into this with a chip on her shoulder, considering all of the comments that she has been getting, you know, from her original announcement for the tournament going into the original tapings for the tournament in July. So I think this was just, I thought this was a hell of a match.
I have a new favorite match in the first round thus far. As good as I thought Sarah Logan versus Mia Yim was, as good as I thought Abby Lath versus Jazzy Gabbert was, or Gabbert, excuse me. This match was better than both of them, and this match was exactly what Patrick said it was. And I'm going to take it even one step further. This match was basically Piper Niven flipping a bird to all of the haters that had come up to her or that had been giving her grief about it. And I would imagine this was specifically her telling Kevin Dunn where he can stick it and how,
where to go and how to get there.
Yeah,
exactly. Because frankly, if you didn't look at this match coming out of this match, and if you didn't see Piper Niven as a star coming out of this match based on fan reaction alone, you're an idiot.
Oh, you're Kevin Dunn.
Well said, Patrick and Harry. I agree. I've been Piper Nevin, whatever you want to call her. She's terrific. She reminds me a whole lot of Bam Bam Bigelow. Just in a female's body. She's quick.
Wow.
And much better looking.
And much better looking. Absolutely. I agree.
Can I give you a slightly different take on that?
Sure.
I didn't see Bam Bam, I saw Vader. A little bit more physical than Bam Bam was.
And as agile as Vader was, I just thought Bam Bam was almost that next level to me personally. But that's who Piper just reminds me of. And I love Vader too. And I think that's what Sage was going for in her match with Bianca, was very much a more Vader-esque character of bruising you, putting you in the corner. And then, when she thinks she's had you, just throwing you into the mat as hard as she can. So, I mean,
and then looking
way,
like an idiot at the end.
Yes.
And then looking like an idiot at the end. So yeah,
it's very true. I mean, if you're throwing around Bam Bam and Vader around anybody, though, I mean, that's great, great comparisons for anybody. Two phenomenal wrestlers. So that's the end of episode 3. Let's go ahead and rate this. Whoever wants to go first, say something.
To playing off the issues we had for the first one. Yes. I'll go first here. And if you haven't listened yet, the first episode of our Mae Young Classic review should be available on W2Mnet.com. All right. As far as this episode goes, 6.5. I think Dakota and Kavita was basically what it was going to be. The other matches, in my opinion, either delivered up to my expectations or in a couple of instances over-delivered on my expectations. I was really impressed by Piper Nevin here, and Santana Garrett, I've been singing her praises for years now. I'm a little bit surprised they didn't go with Santana in that match because she has more of the traditional look that WWE is going for. But I think doing that and having Piper pick up the win in this match is going to show a lot of people that they don't necessarily look at things the way that people think they do. Or maybe Triple H doesn't look at things the way that maybe certain people before him did.
In my case, I think I'm going to go with the same score that I gave one of the previous episodes of a 6. This could, to me, have been like a 7-plus episode. I thought the main event absolutely more than delivered. I thought Sage and Belair was actually a very good match, too. And, you know, Toni Storm looks like, you know, a star coming out of her match with Aisha Raymond. But good God, that Devi and Kai match just really set the bar low for Dakota Kai. And, you know, I hope with her winning, and especially with her going up against Rhea Ripley in the second round, for the love of God, please be better.
I think I'm more with Harry on this and around the 6.5 area, just because I thought the main event was so good. There's a much better supporting undercard in Toni Storm's coming out party at the beginning, and Sage Beckett and Bianca Belair, I thought, was a very good hard-hitting match that got to show off really what both of those girls can do. And the main event, like I said, just phenomenal. I think I'd put that on the same level as Mia Yim and Sarah Logan as maybe tied for the best match of the tournament so far. And just really wonderful stuff, so... Go ahead.
I'm back. When did I drop?
So you finished everything you meant to say, as far as I could tell.
Yeah.
All right. Sounds good to me. Then we'll go with it.
Okay. And with that interlude, that brings us to the last episode that's been released, episode 4. And that opens with Renee Michelle versus Candice LeRae. You have Johnny wrestling at ringside, supporting his wife. And I thought this was fine for what it was. I'm a huge Candice wrestling fan. Somebody who I've followed for a very, very long time since I got to see her originally in PWG. All those years ago when she was still palling around with the Human Tornado and getting just the bejesus knocked out of her monthly. Renee Michelle, I feel like I've seen her before and I'm struggling to connect the dots on where, but I thought as far as NXT prospects went, she was on the... I don't want to say lower end. She didn't impress me as much.
You know what 5 I got watching Renee Michelle here was?
What's that?
Do you remember a Larry Littlefeather?
Yes.
That's the vibe I got there. I thought she was okay, but this was definitely more of a showcase for Candice because they feel like Candice is obviously the bigger star here. Renee was one of those instances of they wanted to put her in the tournament because she has a spot in developmental, but I think similar to me towards a couple of the other people that they put in, they put her into this tournament before she was ready for this kind of exposure. I think that Renee Michelle's, honestly, she may end up better off as a behind-the-scenes talent than an in-ring talent, in my opinion.
I mean, you have, you know, arguably one of the most popular wrestlers, you know, in the entire tournament in Candice LeRae. So I didn't think Renee Michelle did that bad. The one gripe I have is the absurdly stupid name that they gave Candice LeRae's finisher, Miss LeRae's Wild Ride. You know, because they don't really want to mention the mustache ride, its actual name, and, you know, kind of a play off of, yes, Ryan's original finisher before the before he became the King of Dong style. I didn't think it was that bad of a match. Maybe not opener quality, but not
which it was
terrible.
It was opener quality because it was the opener. Candice is going to be capable of much more going forward in the tournament, and her opponent in the next round kind of states that for me very obviously because I'm really looking forward to seeing what they do with her next round opponent. We'll talk about that match a little bit later on in this episode. But I think the issue... no, actually, it's the match after the next match. So the next match is Lacey Evans and Tenera Conti, but the... More specifically in regards to Renee Michelle, I think, and I'm reminding myself a little bit of the episode here, and I think Larry over at 411 Race is a very valid point as well, in that the issue with Renee is she looked very unsure of herself.
Mm-hmm.
So it's there was a level of timidness that you can't have when you're in this kind of a setting.
I absolutely agree with that. There are moments in this match where she'll do a move and she'll have Candice on the mat and she sort of takes too long a pause to where it feels like she's more lost on what to do than really what maybe she should, where she should be for this level. You know, cause they're trying to pull this off as something very special and having that sort of lapse in judgment, I guess, is what I'll call it. It doesn't really add to that feeling, but I think Candice alone brought all the interaction that they were looking for in an opener for an episode. The crowd was super hot for it, and why wouldn't you be? Candice is just, I don't think I've met a person yet who has hated Candice LeRae. So, moving along from there, you have Lacey Evans taking on Tenera Conti. Lacey ends up getting the win here with a Gigantonic. This was a kind of a bit of a basic match to me. I thought Conti was very interesting in that they really want to put over her judo background, and her moveset really reflects that because she's literally tossing you around about maybe 80% of the time. Lacey has that old-school cool vibe to her and wrestles like it, where she's sort of doing all the old-school throwback moves that you would expect from the 80s, and then she'll bring out something very modern, like a Gigantonic or like there's another move she did during this match that really was like, wow, really? That? Okay. But they're both young in their careers. I think Lacey clearly, I think, brings a lot of promise. She has that look that I think WWE is after and all that good stuff. And Tenera's got a long time to grow, so.
I didn't hate Tenera Conti here, but I wasn't super impressed. And I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that I'm just not a big judo person. I'm not real big on judo. I never have been, which is odd because one of my favorite wrestlers actually is a judo practitioner in Rusev. So it's kind of odd that it would be that way here. But I think Lacey Evans definitely has a story to tell in this tournament, and I am much more in favor of Lacey getting this push going forward than I would be of Bianca Belair doing the same.
Lacey, do me a favor, find another finisher, because that it made me nervous when she went up for the when she had Conti up for the Gigantonic. not to say that, you know, she won't be able to pull it off cleaner in the future, but that's a move that I would prefer to see on somebody use that has had a lot of time. That was probably the most nervous I've been in the entire first round, was when she had Tenara Conti up for the Jig and Tonic.
Mm-hmm. My big thing about the Jig and Tonic that she did was the fact that she jumped into it. I don't think she needed to do that.
Either way, I'm not comfortable seeing her try and hit that. I didn't think this was that bad of a match because this was a relative unknown versus unknown match, unlike, you know, most of the rest of the first round. I do think, you know, the right person wins here. I do think Lacey Evans does have a better story to tell, or at least more of a story to tell right now. Mm-hmm. And I like the look. I like almost everything about her. Just don't do that finisher. You make me nervous.
If you haven't watched the episode yet, and you get to it, just watch Conti land. It's a little high for comfort, and I absolutely agree with Patrick that maybe you want to practice it a little bit more before we bust this out again. But it for sure, like, the Jig and Tonic's always been like a final nail in the coffin for me. It looks like a finisher. It feels like a finisher. It has all that, and I think it works for Lacey in the long run. Just maybe practice it a little bit more. But
can I make a suggestion to Lacey if she wants to continue using this move?
Sure.
Talk to Corey Graves.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
For those that don't know, back when Corey Graves was a wrestler, because before he became a commentator, he was a wrestler, as Sterling James Keenan, his finishing move was the MK Ultra, which is the Jig and Tonic.
Right. Very, very true. So, with all that being said, let's move on to our next match here, which is Reyna Gonzalez taking on Nicole Savoy. And this, I thought this was another sort of setback, and I understand what they're trying to do is let Reyna show off what she can do, and to that end of what they were going for, it works, because Reyna has the old-school Southern Brawler act down to a science, and I felt like she worked that pretty well here, but for somebody who they pulled over as the queen of suplexes and likes to throw you around and all that great stuff, letting Nicole actually do that would have been nice. However, she basically plays a fight from underneath face and ends up getting the win after she catches Reyna in a cross arm breaker. But she did not get a great platform, I think, to really show off what she can do here. And that kind of hurts her a little bit moving forward, if you ask me, if you've never seen what she can do.
Correct me if I'm wrong here. I don't believe she actually threw one suplex this entire match.
She did not.
Nope.
Yeah. Queen of suplexes, huh? Sure. Okay. Yeah, about that. The cross arm breaker finisher looked impressive. At the same time, though, as you said, if she's going to be laying around on the mat getting her butt handed to her for the better part of about 5 minutes, not going to do much for people's expectations of her going into her match with Candice Wrestling in the next round. Mm-hmm. That being said, from what I understand, Savoy works far better as a heel than she does as a babyface, and having her as a face here against Reyna Gonzalez may have affected that dynamic to which she's used to working as well.
All right. I'm probably going to go a little further than I should with this one. For those that know me know that I'm actually very good friends with Nicole Savoy. I have been for the better part of 2 years now since she debuted.
Bark!
Go to hell. Another friend of mine messaged me before I had a chance to watch this match and said, be on the lookout, Savoy's match is weird. From the handshake, I looked and I just went, what the hell? Because Savoy goes for the handshake and Gonzalez doesn't. I'm like, Savoy's the face. I have never seen her work as a face in a match, ever. It was really weird to watch. And yeah, you're supposed to be the queen of suplexes, and they get that nickname over. You know, that JR mentions it a couple times, and then you throw no suplexes.
Mm-hmm.
Now, to be fair, her next round opponent is much smaller, and she may be able to throw around a little more, you know, being Candice LeRae. But the whole match, while not bad, was weird as hell to me. And the weird part was is that, you know, I mentioned that I wanted to withhold a lot of my opinions on Facebook about it. Savoy herself was the one who messaged me and said, no, let it go. And I even told her, I was like, well, part of it includes you. And she goes, yeah, it was weird for me to work as a babyface as well. The whole thing was a weird situation to be in. So I'm hoping for better things in the future. Hopefully, you know, when she goes to face LeRae in the next round, maybe she will bring out more of, you know, a heel side to her, because quite frankly, who the hell is the boot Candice LeRae?
Exactly.
Nobody. Yeah. So it just, this match was weird. Not bad, but weird.
Maybe you can use your connection to get us an interview for Wrestling Unwrapped.
No.
Do you guys have any extra thoughts on Reyna Gonzalez? Because I know we talked a whole bunch about Savoy's weirdness.
Honestly, Reyna's under a developmental contract right now with NXT, so she's not what she's going to be once they decide to actually use her. I get the idea here. It's, correct me if I'm wrong here. Tell me by your sell here, Paul. Like a female Stan Hansen.
I think that vibe is there.
I think that female Desperado.
Yes, ignoring she is her father's daughter. Yes, we get that, Patrick.
Ignoring his awful attempt at whatever that was. The reason I say Stan Hansen is because, as Paul mentioned when he was first talking about this match, the Southern brawling thing that she did during the course of this match, you could definitely see that as being her specialty. I don't think that Savoy was the right opponent to try that against, though. I think maybe if they would have had her against Candice in the first round, then that might have worked more there than it would have here against Savoy, because Savoy is somebody who, when you watch her, you want to see her throw people. Mm-hmm. To steal an old Taz line, she'd rather throw you than know you.
Very true.
And that honestly kind of makes this match come off a little disappointing because of everything that was hyped going into it, and then what it did, and in this case, did not deliver.
Very fair. Very, very fair. Do you have any thoughts on her, Patrick?
I think I pretty much said my piece.
All right. Well, then let's go ahead and move on to the main event here. Tessa Blanchard takes on Kairi Sane. This is a match that had a whole heap of praise on it from the internet coming out of the tapings, and there was a ton of videos going around of Kairi's elbow here at the finish, which is what she uses to put Tessa away. This match started off really, really great and was looking like it was going to be the match of the tournament, and then it sort of loses some steam down the stretch, which is super unfortunate, but if a contract didn't have Tessa Blanchard's name on it by the time she got backstage, then there's something wrong with this picture, because she is... I followed Tessa for a long time. I've got to see her grow into the wrestler that she is now, and she is... If you go back, even 2 years ago, watching her now versus then is just almost night and day. She is phenomenal, and she's always had the old-school storytelling mannerisms of using her face and all of her body language to really tell the story here, and that's... absolutely in focus on this one, as well as Kairi's terrificness inside the ring as well, who the fans just immediately leapt to attention for. And like I said, it lost steam, but this match was awesome. I loved it.
Okay, to kind of piggyback off of what Patrick said in the prior match, this right here is a literal case of she is her father's daughter. Mm-hmm. I see Tessa's ring work, I see her mannerisms, I see her promos, I see Tully. And I mean that as a compliment, because I am a massive Tully Blanchard fan. Unfortunately, she also shares one other thing in common with her father, and that's his attitude. And the belief is that's what's cost her from having a deal with the WWE. That being said, Tessa's only 22. There's still plenty of time for her to hopefully get everything in check and to become a superstar under the WWE banner, because the only thing holding Tessa back from doing that is Tessa. As far as Kairi goes, this is my first time seeing her. I don't watch Paro Reisu. I don't watch Joshi. It's not my thing. That being said, me and Patrick got into a kind of a debate off air, and I kind of want to bring that debate on air if he doesn't mind.
Yeah.
But I'm going to let you go ahead and give your thoughts on the match first before we have our debate.
Hopefully it's not a long one. Like Harry said, unfortunately, you know, he mentioned Marty Bell's getting the better of her. From what I've heard, that it was actually Tessa whose attitude got the better of her. Saying this as someone who, despite what Shimmer fans may think, a lot of Shimmer fans, I am a Tessa Blanchard fan. You know, and I absolutely want to see her succeed. But if it was indeed her attitude that keeps getting her into deep trouble, that's potentially strike two against her, because she had problems WrestleMania weekend last year, too. That being said, in terms of this match, I didn't really think it was that bad of a match. I think it was overhyped. I think it was overhyped, and I think it was overrated. Not that it was bad. It was a very, very good match. Absolutely worthy of this main event. But I would not put this as the best match of the first round. I thought, you know, the two of them had very, very good against each other. And I'll kind of start off the debate here with my piece, because I know where Harry's going to go with this. But I look at Kairi Sane's elbow, and holy cow, A, did that crowd go nuts when all she did was point to her elbow. That was it. That is insane. Mm-hmm. But I look at somebody who is completely I look at Kairi Sane's elbow, and I see someone who doesn't know how to throw an elbow. I don't like... To me, she looks like someone who has no clue what she's doing when she's throwing down an elbow. You know, throwing the leg out and everything. It just, I can see where, you know, it's all more force kind of thing, as Harry's going to mention. I know he is. But to me, it looks like an untrained wrestler throwing down an elbow. I would much prefer to see a big, tighter elbow like Bayley throws, or like, you know, Macho Man Randy Savage threw. For that much tighter feeling on an elbow where it looks like they're going to take your head off.
Savage used to kick his legs out when he threw the elbow as well, sir.
He stopped that, and he pretty much would glide all the way down. Hers right. looked completely wild and out of the way. I did not like the elbow.
I'm going to be the contrarian to here. Me and Patrick had this conversation off air in our own personal Facebook chat, and I wanted to bring it here because I wanted to get your thoughts on this as well, Paul. My opinion, Kyrie's diving elbow is better than Bailey's. And the reason I say that is because of the way that she throws her legs out underneath her. It looks like she's trying to get more drive to the elbow. It looks like she's trying to put herself forward by kicking her legs out the way that she does in order to get more impact on it. In my opinion, that elbow was one of the more visually impressive finishing moves in the entire first round of this tournament.
I've had the long-standing privilege of being able to watch Kairi for a while since I got into Stardom, and I follow Lucha Underground, which she's had a guest appearance on that show as well. And to me, I think Kairi has just one. I think she has star written all over. She's engaging. She's like it's that same Candice LeRae effect. Like you look at her and you can't hate her. Like she's got that aura about her. When it comes to her elbow drop, the wildness to me is part of the charm, because here's this you know, very nice, cute looking girl, and then suddenly she's in the ring going nuts on you, and by the end of it, she's literally leaping as high into the air as she can and throwing everything aside to drive the elbow into your chest to basically murder you. And I love everything about that, personally. I think it's great. It's one, like you said, it's one of the most visually appealing finishers in the tournament. I think she has one of the most beautiful elbow drops I've ever seen in wrestling. This is coming from somebody who has been a Macho Man Randy Savage fan since the age of 5 years old, and he's almost 30. So,
Seth.
Go ahead.
Savage is at the top for me. Punk's is right up there with Savage's. I'd probably put Kyrie's third.
I mean, Punk definitely took a page out of Savage's book, and what Patrick was talking about, where it turned more into a glide rather than a full force downward dive to kill you. And
Kyrie's is more reminiscent of the original Savage album, though. Patrick is right in that regard. Towards the later end of Savage's career, Savage started to go more towards the legs out to the side in order to glide rather than crash. But when Savage was originally throwing this elbow in the WWF around the time that he was the heavyweight champion, he was looking to murder bitches with it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I agree with that entirely. And I forgot what point I was going to make here. So I won't.
I apologize.
Don't worry about it. let's go ahead and review episode 4 here before we start wrapping up the first round. So what are you guys going to give it?
I mean, given the four matches that we got, it seemed to me to be probably among the most well-rounded episodes, even aside from is it just me, or does it seem like most of the matches kind of, or I should say all of the episodes kind of had the same format? Decent opener, kind of a bad second match, and okay, the main event that delivered. It seemed like every single episode went the same format.
I don't think that was unintentional, Patrick. I don't imagine this was the order these matches were taped in. It was just edited that way.
It very well could have been. I'm going to go ahead and give this one a 6 again. Nothing too terrible. You know, I didn't think the Gonzalez-Savoy match for, you know, I think out of all of the second matches, this may have still have been among the best ones. But it's another case where, God, I hope the second round's better for Savoy, which it will be.
It's
nothing too bad, and the main event delivers, but I just don't feel like it's worthy of the praise that it's getting.
I will agree with you on one point. I will agree with you in that I feel like the main event is not. The main event is not the best match of the first round, in my opinion. It's very good. It's up there with Abby Lath against Jazzy Gabert and Mia Yim versus Sarah Logan. But I think Piper Nevin versus Santana Garrett is better than all three of those matches, in my opinion. That being said, I thoroughly enjoyed the main event here. I thought it flew by. I really, really wish we'd have gotten more than one Tessa match here, because Tessa's a superstar in the making. Mm-hmm. She's going to be a superstar. There is no doubt in my mind. Nicole Savoy's match was disappointing, but I think that had more to do with the layout of the match than the match itself. Lacey Evans stands out as a star in this show for me. And the opening contest with Candice. Candice is just that plucky baby face that everybody's going to love. She's over like Rover.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to go with a 6.5 here. I think it's as good as the last episode was, because it doesn't have the drag down that Dakota Kai versus Kavita Devi was. And the main event doesn't quite reach the same level that the Piper Nevin versus Santana Garrett match did.
So I'm going to go with Patrick's score on this one. I think a 6 fits it. I agree with you guys that the main event sort of doesn't deliver all the hype it got. I was expecting somewhere in the 4-star territory from the way it was getting praised. I have it at 3.25. It's still great, don't get me wrong. It has a lot of parts to love, but it lost stuff down the stretch, which is just a big unfortunate mess. But everything else in this show, I think, is fine. Like everybody else said, Reina Gonzalez and Nicole Savoy had layout problems. Lacey Evans and Tenera Conti was going to be what it was going to be, very basic because they're both so new. But I like the bits that we got to see of them that you know, outside of the wrestling ability. And Candice is just awesome, so that's always great there, too. So let's go ahead and just try to wrap up the first round here before we move on to predicting round 2. And a big thing that I want to talk to you guys about was commentary, because there was a lot of talk about maybe JR and Lita not being the best pairing. There's a lot of talk about JR's, at least outside of the WWE, his you could sort of tell he's starting to get old in places. And I think that was, you could see a little bit of that during this tournament and what they did here. But what'd you guys think of JR and Lita together during the entire four episode span we just covered? Somebody, anybody.
While he's formulating it.
I've got it. So,
okay.
You know, I think JR was a decent pick here. Not the best that they could have had. I do think this would be better suited for Mauro Ranallo.
Mm-hmm.
JR is Agreed. Definitely starting to show his age, but at the same time, miles ahead of Lita. There were times where Lita's commentary was cringeworthy to me. She's bad enough on the pre-shows sometimes. I don't want to hear, you know, 9 episodes with, you know, 31 matches of her. You know, or well, probably 32 once the finals air, and we'll probably get an extra match. But I just, not a fan of Lita on the mic, and JR's not bad, but I do think this would be better suited for somebody else. And hell, maybe if more Lita, it might actually be better for her.
Mm-hmm.
I have 4 words to describe what commentary for this show could have been that would have been probably miles better than what we got. Mauro Ranallo, Renee Young.
Definitely. I would have been okay with that. I enjoyed Renee's Young on NXT while she was there personally.
I think the reasoning behind having Lita there is they wanted a face of women's wrestling past in the WWE there to kind of talk about what this means in regards to how far along the WWE has come. But at the same time, as Patrick said, when she wasn't trying to speak in soundbites, she was cringeworthy at times.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like JR was on his game at times here, but at the same time, you could also tell that he is not the JR of old. I will not sit here and badmouth Jim Ross. Jim Ross was my wrestling existence growing up. I will not sit here and badmouth him. I will say that it is clear that JR's best days are behind him, but if JR still feels that he is able to do this, I will listen to JR call wrestling shows.
Go ahead, Patrick.
Sorry. Go ahead. I just want to say, can I add 4 more words, but in the form of a question? Where was a Lunger Blaze?
Second set of tapings, I believe.
I also believe that's correct. She's supposed to do backstage interviews, from what I'm aware of.
Oh God! So it's still going to be JR and Lita with the next 4.
As far as I can tell, yes.
With a Lunger Blaze who's not a proven interviewer doing interviews. Oy.
That's where we're at. I agree with you guys. There are times where I think JR and Lita actually do a pretty good job, and it's not even when they're doing commentary. It's when they're very much just having friendly banter with each other, talking about random stuff. About a wrestler, for example. But when it comes to calling a match, it's mostly JR doing the most of the legwork, and Lita is just, there are times where I feel like Lita adds absolutely nothing to the conversation, and that is very unfortunate. And as much as I, like you, Harry, I love JR as well, but you can tell he's getting older, there are problems here and there, and he just, I don't think he can carry a show by himself, honestly.
He needs somebody next to him that can help keep the conversation flowing. In my opinion, while I understand the desire to put Lita in the broadcast booth here, if you were going to have Jim Ross call this show, somebody that I know was at this taping that would have been a much better choice to call the show with him would have been Corey Graves.
I think Corey Graves and Oscar God be on everything. He's tremendous. I think him and JR would have been wonderful. I absolutely think the dream team for this would have been Corey Graves and Mauro Ranallo as well. But We get out what we got here, and unfortunately we have to sit through a lot more of this. But my other big question before we get into performances and stuff, does this tournament, does it feel special to you at all?
It does not feel as important as the CWC did to me because of the fact that they actually took the time to promote the CWC as this weekly event, whereas they're making the Mae Young Classic episodes binge watch category. I feel like once we get to the live event finale, they'll probably put a little bit more status and steam behind it, but just a couple of casual mentions on Raw and SmackDown about, oh, don't forget, the Mae Young Classic is streaming live now on the WWE Network. Woohoo, go us! It's not going to mean a damn bit of difference in the long run once they find out that the numbers from the binge watch only aren't as high as the numbers from the watching of the Cruiserweight Classic were by having that in incremental releases.
Mm-hmm. It's no, by absolutely no stretch of the imagination does this feel as special as the CWC. At the same time, what's sad to me is the fact that the CWC was, as I mentioned, 10 weeks long. Mm-hmm. This entire tournament will be done in as little as 15, and if rumors are to be true, as many as 16 days. Going from Monday to, I've heard, September 12th, you know, being, I believe, is the set date right now, but I've heard rumors they may move it to September 13th and do it at a Full Sail taping. But it does not feel as special by any stretch of the imagination, and that's actually a major disappointment to me. It's one of my biggest turnoffs to the entire tournament.
The in-ring content has lived up to my expectations thus far. I mean, there have been a couple of is, and I'm sure we'll talk about our favorite matches and stuff here in a little bit because you were probably going to segue us into that. But what I was going to say here is the in-ring action has more than held up its end of the bargain, but it's the way that it's been promoted and the way that it's being presented is what's leaving a little bit to be desired for me.
Go ahead, Paul.
No, go ahead, Patrick. You're about to make a point.
I would even disagree on that point because it felt like every single match in the first round of the CWC and almost all of the matches in the first round of the UKCT were almost must-watch things.
I feel like
in this case, out of the three tournaments that they've had, I feel like this is the weakest first round.
I am more than willing to agree with you on that point. The main events have absolutely delivered every show to me, if you ask me. It's just, it hasn't been... CWC gave us a ton of great stuff early, and it gave us a ton of great stuff late, and there were some lacking middle episodes, if you ask me. This one at least does give you one match every show to look forward to, and for that it's very much appreciated. Another fact is, you know, obviously a lot of these women, a lot of the women on the show getting a bigger spotlight to perform on is wonderful. Seeing the NXT prospects is great as well. But I'm glad it's just not me, because watching this, it feels like I'm watching NXT just very quickly. And as much as I love NXT and as much as I have enjoyed this tournament so far, honestly, it doesn't have that specialness to it that makes it feel like we're going to be talking about this for a long time to come or anything like that. And obviously this is just after the first round and there's a long way to go and all that other great stuff. But from these first four episodes, it doesn't really feel any different than just watching WWE programming or NXT, if you ask me. And that really sucks. Go.
I was going to say, let me ask you a question, Paul, and you can agree or disagree with me on this one if you like. Your thoughts here. I felt that the CWC was very rewatch worthy. Like, there were certain things and aspects about the CWC where you would be willing to go back and rewatch the episodes, even the first round episodes, just to get like a couple of the moves or a couple of the moments or a couple of the things that you may have missed the first time around. To me, when it comes to the first round of the Mae Young Classic here, there's no match, there's no particular episode that I'm going to feel the desire to go back and watch a second time.
I agree with you for the most part. I could see me maybe wanting to watch some of these main events again, and maybe somewhere down the line whenever a lot of these girls are either on NXT or they're making a lot of noise on the main roster or something like that, you can go back and go, hey, remember when they did this? But As far as me wanting to rewatch all four episodes right now, not really. I enjoyed the main events. And like I said, if I ever got bored maybe one day and wanted to really see something, I could. This is easy just to go click and find the main event real fast. But other than that, there's not a lot of reasons to go back and rewatch this first round at all, if you ask me.
I do feel like if we're going to have that blow away, you know, must see episodes, I have a hunch it's going to be first two episodes of the second pack, being obviously the second round, because looking at these matches, you're looking at some big time, absolutely will deliver matches.
Right.
I think we're looking at a better second round than we are first, and God, I hope so.
I think you're absolutely right on that. And speaking about match quality, I know we talked a lot about favorite matches, and I'm sure they're mostly just going to be the main events, but what was everybody's favorite match out of all this?
I think it's a toss up between the four main event matches, and I don't think anything else could even touch it. I am going to go with Piper Niven and Santana Garrett, though. I thought, you know, Garrett, there's very little that Garrett can't do, and this, to me, was the showing of Piper Niven going in with a chip on her shoulder with everything that she had to take and telling all of them where to shove it. I thought this match absolutely delivered even more out of the four matches. And don't get me wrong, the four main event matches were all very, very good. But for me, I think if there is one match from the first round that you should go back and watch, I actually think it's this one.
I hate to say this, but I agree with Patrick. Piper Niven versus Santana Garrett for the exact same
reason.
I mean, I'm going to make it the hat trick. And Patrick put it perfectly, if you ask me. So I won't try to add anything. So there are a lot of indie darlings in this. There are a lot of NXT prospects. Who do you think had the best performance out of all the quote-unquote indie darlings, and which NXT prospect impressed you the most?
Do you want to go first here, Patrick?
I mean, might as well. That's an issue here, because I'm looking at the second round, and I think one of the major complaints going into this was, oh, you're going to put the indie darlings in here just to lose to the WWE trainees. Well, that only happened once. Literally once. And that being, you know, in my eyes, the Sage Beckett and Belair match. Other than that, everybody else was a known name already. And those that are under WWE developmental that won, most of the WWE developmental wrestlers that won were previously indie darlings. Mm-hmm. You know, Abby Lafe, Rachel Evers is kind of a little bit of both. And Dakota Kai. So I think the most impressive, I think, actually is still Piper Niven for me. Although I will say fair play to Abby Lafe. I thought she and Jazzy had a very, very good match. But I think Piper Niven just took everything that she had received and stuck it right back at him.
So you want to know who we were most impressed by that is under contract and who we were most impressed by that isn't, Paul?
Yeah, let's go ahead and do that. I was thinking more like the NXT ground up projects, personally, but if you just want to go by who signed and who isn't, that's fine too.
Because to me, they're in the same match. Sarah Logan and Mia Yim.
Mm-hmm.
This is the best I've ever seen Sarah Logan look, and Mia did nothing short of delivering in her opportunity here, and hopefully it leads to even more opportunities and even bigger opportunities for Mia going forward with the company.
I'm with you on Sarah Logan for sure. As far as people who are signed to NXT deals, she by far looked the best, and she does have, obviously, have a lot of indie background to her. If we're talking about just NXT ground up, I was super impressed. I thought both Bianca and Lacey have a lot to offer there and all of that, but if we're just talking... Oh, gosh, I forget where I was going.
Can I chime in with one real quick?
Yeah.
If we're talking NXT ground up only, Vanessa Bourne.
Yeah, that was who I was thinking of.
I stole your thunder.
You did, but you actually remembered her name, and I was sitting there trying to place it, so you win.
the former Danielle Camella.
I agree. I thought she by far looked the most competent out of everybody in there, and that's not to say anything against Bianca, who I also thought looked very good in there, but to me, I felt like... Jesus Christ, I forget. Well, Vanessa Bourne looked awesome, so...
Consider quality of opposition as well. I would much rather have a match against Serena Deeb than Sage Beckett.
It's very true. Very true. On the flip side, Santana Garrett, to me, just leaped off the screen. And she does that no matter where she goes, but I think that was especially prevalent here, and her match with Piper obviously was phenomenal. But for sure, Santana just screams, sign me already, even if you don't know who she is. She already feels like she fits in, and that's just wonderful, so... and unless you guys have anything else you want to talk about from round one, let's go ahead and start predicting round two.
I actually do have a question here for you guys, and we talked about a couple of the matches as disappointments. What one particular thing was the most disappointing to you? Because to me, it wasn't the matches; it was the commentary team. I felt like in certain instances, the commentary team actually literally distracted away from what was going on inside of the ring.
Patrick?
I could say the trophy, but it just reminds me of the Pedro Craig that you would play for on an episode of Guts. But
see, that's what I love about it.
Yeah, you leave the aggro crag alone, you asshole.
Okay, hang on, because I loved Guts. It was one of my favorite Nickelodeon shows. But you don't want your trophy to look like something from an over 20-year-old show.
100% disagree.
Yeah, I was about to say, speak for yourself.
Shut up. But I will...
Oh, look at that. Patrick accidentally got hung up on. Paul? Are you ready to do predictions?
Go ahead, Patrick.
I hate you guys. I will say that far and away, I think the biggest disappointment for me is still the commentary. Because, yeah, they are distracting. I don't want to spill of JR. One of, if not the greatest comment of all time, far and away, bar none. Mm-hmm. You know, rest in peace, Gordon Solie. And when he actually did care, I actually did like Tony Schiavone as well, and Mike Tenay as well. But you're talking about one of the greatest commentators alive. But he felt out of place for quite a bit of this. And I already don't like his on pre-show, because she just adds nothing to me. Mm-hmm. And for the most part, that happened with these four episodes as well. She added nothing. I did like the conversation that she had with JR when Sage Beckett was coming out about...
If JR had ever seen a shaman, yeah, that bit made me laugh too.
Yeah, that was probably the best of Lita's commentary though, and it had nothing to do really with the match, mm-hmm. the match itself.
Well, it goes back to what Paul was saying about the fact that they were at their best when they were just kind of casually conversating with each other rather than actually trying to call the matches.
Yeah, that's not really a good thing. You want the focus to be on the match, not on your witty banter. So for me, yeah, the commentary.
You mentioned JR being the greatest, in your opinion, one of the greatest commentators ever. I will give credit where credit is due to those that have come before. I did not get to watch a lot of Gordon Sully, but everything I hear says Gordon was amazing. That being said, to me, JR is second all time.
Tony Schiavone?
You shut your filthy whore mouth.
Somebody's been listening to Gary too much.
Somebody's been listening to too many episodes of What Happened When.
Maybe.
Well, you know. But anyway, to me, Ross is number two behind Joey Styles.
I think that's fair. I love both JR and Joey Styles for very different reasons, personally. The most disappointing thing to me about this tournament, though, is just the, as we talked about, how unspecial it feels. I wanted this to feel like a much bigger deal. And don't get me wrong, the ladies here are working very hard, you can tell, in all of the matches, whether the layout problems or other things, kind of rear their head at something else entirely. But sitting here watching it just feels like NXT, and that is definitely, definitely not what you want to feel like when you're watching this, I feel.
All right, do we want to go with the most disappointing performance as well from the competitors, since we all three focused outside of the ring?
We can if you want to.
Because I know mine.
Go ahead.
Marty Bell.
I feel like it's just picking on a dead horse almost if you listen to our first episode.
Yeah, that's not even fair.
Like, I don't put any of the blame for that match on Rachel Levers. Okay, maybe a little bit of the blame on Rachel Levers, but the vast majority of the blame on that match goes on Marty Bell, in my opinion. The sad thing was, is there was probably something from each episode that you could probably consider disappointing as far as the in-ring content go, whereas you really never had that feel about the CWC.
I guess that's fair. If I had to pick a most disappointing performance, it would absolutely be Marty Bell, too. She, even compared to all of the NXT prospects, you know, absolutely the worst looking in this tournament, if you ask me. But let's go ahead and start predicting round two here, because go ahead, Patrick.
I didn't say mine either, and because of the fact that the two of you took Bell, I almost feel the need to try and disagree. For me, granted, I will pretty much 98 end of this put this up against their opposition, but for me, Dakota Kai. You know, because I've said for a long time, you know, I'm probably one of Dakota Kai's number one fans. But to me, I thought she had the most disappointing performance, but look at who she had to face in Kavita Devi. So, you know, I'm glad that she's getting a second chance to hopefully perform much better in the second round. But, God, that first match was just terrible to me.
Well, if we're going by that logic, as we said, picking Marty Bell's kind of shooting fish in a barrel here. I'd go with Nicole Savoy.
Yeah.
But based on the fact that her match was put together the way that it was, and she looked like she escaped catching that cross arm breaker for the victory.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I mean, that's a total layout problem there, though, and that's not entirely on Savoy, but you're right, that is very disappointing, too. And seeing as I only wanted to go an hour and a half, and we're almost at an hour 15, let's start predicting round two. and let's look at the left side of the bracket, top side, Abby Laith taking on Rachel Evers. I'm really looking forward to seeing what these two can do. I feel like they parallel each other very nicely, and I'm looking forward to another spirited contest in the same vein that Abby had with Jazzy.
And much the same way, Abby's going to stand tall like she did against Jazzy here, because if in this particular match, I think Abby will experience a size advantage, even though they're relatively close to the same size. I think Abby's a little bit taller. But both of these women, Rachel's performance will definitely be a step up from her round one performance. We'll see what Abby's capable of against the competent. We'll see what Abby's capable of against... We will see what Rachel's capable of against a competent opponent. We'll see if Abby can live up to the deliverance that she gave us in the first round against Jazzy Gabert. Easy for me to say.
Yeah.
Yikes.
Due to Wrestle Circus's commentary team being a pair of dicks, I am going to withhold a prediction from this one.
Fair enough. the winner of that match will meet the winner of this one. That's Princesa Suhei takes on Mercedes Martinez. Once again, I feel like this could be a really interesting match just because while Mercedes loves to stand and bang, and Princesa maybe being a step slower than I'm predicting, this could be a lot closer than what I'm thinking. But hopefully Suhei turns up the speed a little bit in this one to have a bit of a difference from what this previous match we just talked about will have.
My biggest concern about this match is clunky, because I feel that there is a very strong potential for clunky here. I'm hoping that the performance that Princesa Suhei had against Kaylee Ray was just nerves, because I think Mercedes will drag her kicking and screaming to the kind of match that Mercedes would want to have, and I'm going to pick Mercedes Martinez.
For me, it to me feels like we are on a collision course for a lot of the trifecta members, and I was already surprised Suhei got the win over Kaylee Ray, and the performance, while not terrible, wasn't what you expected out of that. So I'm actually still going to take Mercedes, because personally, I still think Mercedes is one of the best in the world today. No matter what anybody tries to tell me any differently. And while, yes, you know, age may not be on her side, but when she has to, as Harry mentioned, she'll drag someone kicking and screaming to one hell of a match. I think this will be a hell of a match, but I think Mercedes ends up getting the win.
Well, I think another thing to point out, too, is that regardless of the age thing being what it is for Mercedes, you have to consider that the opinion of a very valued member of the NXT family, slash, I'm assuming, the Mae Young family, is in attendance for this year, and that's somebody that knows Mercedes Martinez very well in Sarah Amato.
Of course.
Yes, of course. Very much so. I'm a huge fan of Mercedes, too, so once again, you guys nailed everything on the head here. She will drag anybody to the kind of match she wants because she's just that damn good, and she likes to prove it every once in a while. So, moving on to the next set, Nicole Savoy takes on Candice LeRae. This could be incredible. I know Savoy and LeRae have had some matches against each other, and Savoy working the right kind of match that she likes to could make this very interesting for Candice.
Patrick seems to think that the members of Trifecta are on a collision course. Based on the performance that I saw out of Savoy in the first round here, I'm not so sure anymore. Mm-hmm. Not to mention, I'm almost saying that Candice might be a better opponent for, I'm almost saying that Candice might be a better opponent for Shayna Baszler in the regional final down there, because I am picking Shayna over Mia Yim. So I'm going to pick Candice LeRae here.
This one's tough for me because two kind of so-so first matches, but I feel like, you know, I said that I felt like the second round could kind of be that blow-away round. I think this will be a hell of a match. I do think Savoy will finally be able to show what got her to the dance and finally live up to the name the Queen of Suplexes. Are we talking Brock Lesnar numbers? No. But she could become the first lady of Suplex City, I think, in this match, facing a much smaller opponent. So I am taking Savoy in this one. That's not to say that Candice won't put up one hell of a fight.
She's not the mayor, but she's at least in the Treasury Department.
Hey, I said first lady. I didn't say mayor.
Sable would have words to speak with you about that, sir.
She's only married to him, and, well, she's not involved in Suplex City.
That you know of. Waka, waka. Never mind.
Oh, I was next. About to say, oh, boy. the winner of that one will meet the winner of Mia Yim taking on Shayna Baszler. This could be one of the best matches of the entire tournament, if you ask me. This just has classic written all over it.
Oh, this is your best match of the second round. Shayna wins, but it's going to be kicking and screaming. If these girls get anything less than 15 minutes, I am going to be tremendously disappointed.
Do we know how long the time limits are? 20?
30.
30?
I think 30. 20. It was 15 for the first round, so I would assume, okay, 20 would actually probably make sense. Maybe 30.
I would almost think that it'd be 15, 20, 30, 60, or, no.
Or 15, 20, 30, 45, 60.
Eh. Harry already took Shayna. I'm taking Shayna too, so I think we're going to get our first trifecta collision course in the quarterfinals. But like once again, this should, if this does not main event an episode, I will be pissed off because they've had great matches in Shimmer. They've had great matches in AIW. These two always deliver when they are facing each other. I do think Shayna does pick up the win, but this should be potentially, this should be the match of the second round, and this potentially could be match of the tournament.
Agree with you on all that for sure. So that takes care of the left side of the bracket. Moving on to the right side. At the top, you have Kairi Sane taking on Bianca Belair. I'm interested, but I think the winner's pretty plain in this one.
This seems like a gimme. Mm-hmm. Like, this seems like an absolute gimme. Kairi, easily.
Yeah, this one's a layup. Kyrie's winning. My question is going to be, how does Bianca Belair perform on this stage?
I think that's what makes it so interesting, if you ask me. So somebody young being put up against one of the best in the world, if you ask me. Let's see what she does.
Yeah, this is Bianca Belair's chance to either step up or ship out. If she can step her level up to being in the ring with somebody like Kairi Sane, then maybe I will admit that I was wrong about what I said earlier.
Wait, so you're saying that Belair could potentially ship out against someone portraying a pirate?
Though unintentional, hilarious.
I was just going to let that fly, Patrick. Thank you for catching that.
You're welcome.
I'll go walk the plank now.
Oh, boy.
too far.
The winner of that one will take on the winner of Dakota Kai taking on Rhea Ripley. I think both of you already spelled out how much excitement's based around this one. There's a lot of great kicking to be had here for sure.
For the love of God, look at their first round matches. I could potentially see this being the second main event. Not to say that it will or won't be, just looking at the other matches, at least on this side of the bracket, because I know that they're not going per, you know, like first round wasn't per quadrant, so they may not potentially go per each side, but this one also spells out main event for me. I do think Kai picks up the win over Ripley. But that's not to say that, once again, this won't be, you know, a hell of a match between the two of them. This seems a lot closer than the previous match we just talked about.
Rhea Ripley's coming out party in this tournament. An excellent first-round performance against Miranda Salinas, where she looks like a complete and total star. And then this match right here against a contracted NXT female in Dakota Kai. Dakota picks up the win here. Rhea looks like a star. Rhea gets a contract.
Rhea's already signed, I think, isn't she?
Yeah, she already has one. Yeah. That's why she's Rhea Ripley.
Yeah.
Oh. Well, then good for her.
In the indies.
Nice save, Harry.
I didn't know she had a deal. My bad. Yeah, actually, you know what? Wasn't she like Demi Bennett or something on the indies?
Demi Bennett.
Yeah.
I think he corrected you on the bracketology episode, too, about her name on the end.
I think I did.
Oh, boy.
One of right, it won't be this one, though.
The rest of the right side opening up with Serena Deeb taking on Piper Niven. This could be surprisingly great, if you ask me. And as you were saying, Dakota Kai and Rhea Ripley could be a main event. I wouldn't be shocked to see this one maybe being a main event, too, just because of Serena Deeb's, you know, the old vet story here, along with Piper Niven's story.
Go ahead, Patrick.
As hard as Kai and Ripley was to actually call, and that may just be a little bit of my bias towards Dakota Kai, you know, sneaking through, this might just be the toughest one to call for me.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, I feel like Serena D might be due for at least one more round, but if Piper Niven is going to give the performance that she gave against Santana Garrett, this is a tough one to call.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is a really tough one to call, actually. Like I said, for me, this might be 8. I'm going to actually go with Piper. I think they are going to give Piper a little bit of the rub, you know, beating the kind of legend of the tournament in Serena Deeb. I think this is one that where it actually do. That's not to say that this shouldn't be one heck of a match and may actually involve Niven even kicking out of the spear. You know, I wouldn't be surprised to see that. I think it'll be a very, very good match, and it could potentially be, you know, another main event. I should say a second main event, but I'm going to go with Niven, though I would be totally okay if I got this one 100% wrong.
I'm going to say you are half correct. Niven is going to kick out of the spear. She is not going to win, however. I think Niven gets her moment by kicking out of Serena's spear, but I do believe that Serena does pick up a win in advance in the tournament, because I think that the star-making performance for Serena in this tournament comes in the next round for who she's going to pass the proverbial torch to for the next generation of talent in the WWE women's division, or I guess more specifically in NXT here.
I guess speaking of that then, the winner of that one's going to face Lacey Evans and Toni Storm. This one also kind of feels a little apparent on who might win, but, I mean, you never know.
This entire quadrant has seemed relatively tough to call, and this is another one that's tough to call as well. I can kind of tell where Harry's going, and I can completely understand that. I'm actually going to agree with him. While she didn't have the greatest first-round performance, Lacey Evans at least showed she's competent.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what happens when she faces somebody who's more than competent? Remember, you know, Toni Storm is a champion. For how much longer, we don't know. She does have a title defense coming up very, very soon. I believe against Dahlia Black in Progress at, like, Volume 50 or chapter 55, you know, but Toni Storm, you know, would more than hold up her own in the ring. And I think this could be the star making performance for Lacey Evans until her potential, I guess, for Harry match against Deeb. Although I do still think we're going to end up getting Lacey Evans versus Piper Niven.
Yeah, funny story about that. I'm picking Toni Storm.
Really?
Yeah,
next generation of NXT, and yet you're going with Toni Storm.
Yeah, because I think the WWE sees something in Toni Storm, or else she wouldn't have been presented the way she was on the Bracketology special and the way that she was for her episode on the actual Mae Young Classic debut as well.
I don't know how many independent bookings Tony Storm has right now, but if you're around for one of them, I highly suggest you go because it'll be one of the last times you get to see her in an independent show.
You know, I mean, like Patrick said, she does have a title defense in progress coming up against Aaliyah Black at Chapter 55. You were right there, Patrick. She's also currently competing in Stardom's five-star World Grand Prix right now. And she's a can't-miss opportunity, I think, waiting to happen for WWE if they do want to sign her. Currently, as we're sitting here today on October 29th, now October 30th, since it's past midnight here Central Time, she does not have a contract. August, sorry. Whatever day it is. She does not have a contract. So
I heard him say October, and I'm like, something doesn't sound right there.
Yeah, I'm living in the future. I would not be shocked if she has one by the end of this tournament, though.
Now, one thing that we should talk about, and it's something that Harry just brought up in our private Skype chat, although it's going to be made public now. Do injuries play a factor? Because one of the main things that happened is Savoy came up favoring her knee in her match against Gonzalez. So here comes also the other question of, do we throw out the matches where there's potential for replacements?
I mean, if the match happens, the prediction counts.
Well, yeah, but what happens if all of a sudden we find out in the next set of matches Savoy can't go?
Well, Paul's looked at spoilers. He can tell us. Is Savoy in the match?
I can tell you that injuries are not a problem during the rest of the tournament.
Okay.
Okay.
See, actually, this is where Paul's viewing the spoilers actually comes in handy for us. So thank you, Paul.
You're welcome. I now feel a little less terrible.
You know what? That is going to be the nicest thing I say to you, so we might as well get out of here with that.
You might as well. You guys want to plug anything before we bail?
All right, since he went first last time, I'll go first this time. We plugged the stuff that we do here at W2M on the last show, so I'm going to go kind of into business for myself here. Paul and Gary do an excellent job on their Raw review. However, if you want something that airs immediately following Raw, then check out myself, 411 Mania's Tony Acero, and Wrestling to the Max's MMA to the Max, Robert Taylor, as we present the Raw. I'm sure he feels the same way about you.
MMA is for people who can't spell wrestling. That's how I first got heat with Shayna Baszler.
If you don't mind, I'm trying to do a plug here.
I know.
Jackass. As we present the Raw reaction at 11:30 p.m. Eastern Time on Yes Wrestling Radio in association with the Yes Wrestling Group on Facebook and YesWrestling.com.
I guess I should probably plug our show. Be sure to check out the upcoming editions of Wrestling Unwrapped. We can formally say that we have WCW Road Wild 1998 and finishing up our Big Three August 1998 reviews out. The Highway to Hell of SummerSlam 1998 from the world's most famous arena, Madison Square Garden. And then following those, be on the lookout as our next episode will be Rise 1, another mostly all women-oriented company. By the way, Harry and I are very seriously considering breaking out the WCW rules for that show, considering the fact that it's 14 matches. So be on the lookout for that one sometime in the very near future.
Which is code for even if they're not long, you still get your money's worth in quantity.
Including a battle royal.
Oh boy. if you love listening to Harry and Patrick bicker, Wrestling Unwrapped is great. They also are very good at covering wrestling, but
he's not wrong.
Absolutely.
Myself, I'm on Wrestling to the Max with Sean and Gary. We do shows every Monday and Thursday, which are usually Waiting for You Tuesday and Friday on the download. I also do Raw reviews with Gary and NXT reviews with Gary on those respective days as well. And, yeah, that's pretty much it. W2M.com. Oh, shoot.
I was going to say, yeah, you can catch Gary and Paul for Raw and NXT. You can catch myself and Sean for SmackDown Live in 205.
That's right. That's exactly right. Although I think this coming up, it'll be me and you, as I was expecting, since Sean and Gary are going to talk about the NFL opener over on Football to the Max, which is another great show on our W2M network and all that great stuff. You can also find all of this over at W2Mnet.com, like I said at the top. And until next time, when we have to figure out, I guess, when the hell we're going to record the next set of shows, the next four
won't
episodes...
be until next week.
Right. The next four episodes do come out next Monday. If it's anything like us trying to schedule this, I'm sure we'll have a lot of fun. So until then, guys, y'all have a good one.
The following podcast is a W2M Network original production. Visit W2Mnet.com for all of our other great podcasts, plus news, reviews, articles, and opinions from the worlds of wrestling, video games, football, and entertainment.